asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Around 90 migrants are feared dead after a boat capsized off the coast of Libya. Only three survivors are reported, and they say most of those who drowned were Pakistani nationals, while some Libyans were also on board. The International Organization for Migration says at least 10 bodies have washed up on the Libyan coast. British Prime Minister Theresa May is facing increasing pressure to explain her priorities on the UK's future trade relationship with the EU. Following a visit to China, Mrs. May said the UK would not have to choose between a free trade deal with the European Union and pursuing agreements with the rest of the world. Paul Barber reports from London.
After 3 days of warm words in China and $12 billion worth of contracts being signed, Theresa May is returning home to a country and a government still split over Brexit. The Prime Minister is facing calls to clarify her position on whether the UK should remain in a customs union with the EU. Members of her cabinet have issued conflicting statements on the issue, and Mrs. May herself did not rule out such an arrangement.
Darren Osborne's been jailed for life with a minimum term of 43 years for the Finsbury Park van attack last year. He drove a van into a crowd of worshippers outside mosques in London, leaving one person dead. Close to 1,000 miners have been rescued from a gold mine in South Africa. This after a severe storm knocked out power and stranded them underground, as Michael Baleke reports from Kampala.
The mining company says all the workers have been rescued from the gold mine with no fatalities. The workers got trapped in tunnels and shafts after a severe thunderstorm swept through the northern Free State province, causing a power failure. The gold mine operator says the miners are safe and have received food and water. South Africa produces around 10% of the world's gold and is home to some of the deepest mines. Miners often operate more than 2 miles beneath the surface, but mine safety is a perennial concern.
In Australia, an excavation at a factory site in Adelaide has been called off after failing to find the remains of the missing Beaumont children, ensuring the 50-year mystery of their disappearance will continue. From Melbourne, Arthur Stevens.
The dig in Adelaide's beachside suburbs was sparked by recent scientific studies which revealed signs of a large hole dug on the Plimpton North site at around the time the children went missing. 9-year-old Jane, Anna, aged 7, and Grant, 4, never returned after leaving their parents' Glenelg home for an afternoon at the beach on Australia Day, January 26, 1966. Their disappearance sparked an intensive search, but they were never found, making it Australia's most enduring cold case. In 2013, new information focused the investigation on a factory west of Adelaide after two brothers told police they spent the 1966 Australia Day weekend digging a large hole there at the request of owner Harry Phipps. Phipps died in 2004, but his son, who accused his father of years of sexual abuse, believed he had a part in the crime. Arthur Stevens, Melbourne.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to the special Friday edition of the Richie Allen Show. How are you? Hope you're well. As we do this, it's just after 5 p.m. UK time, and there's a grand stretch in the evenings. A grand stretch in the evenings. That's an old Irish cliche. But it's still bright as I speak to you now. Thanks for joining me. Going to take a look at some of the big stories of the day and one or two of the big stories of the week. It'll take about an hour or thereabouts. I haven't timed it very well in the past. We'll see how it goes. Good to be with you. You can tweet me at any time. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Let's get on with it then.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I pressed the wrong button there, so I did. Welcome to the program. Ollie Barrett didn't mention in his broadcast there, in the news there, that breaking news, Donald Trump has approved the release of the memo. The memo that allegedly shows that the FBI abused its powers by spying on one of his aides. That's the breaking news. And I bet you the news rooms, the 24-hour news channels all over the US and the UK are full of that now. The never-ending drama that is the soap opera that is Donald Trump. Will people ever wake up to it? They're being played, of course. So that's what Ollie didn't mention in the news, but it's breaking now. I haven't got much to say about that at all. Right, let's do it then. Let's just crack on. Thanks for joining me. I did mention on Tuesday that in lieu of me not making an appearance on Monday, that I would endeavour to do something on Friday. So here we are. Here we are. I am live. And it is bright still as I look out the window of the studio. That's good. It's nice that. It's nice that people are not coming home when it's dark. You know? It might improve the mood of the nation. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. Right, let's just jump straight in then. Because you would have heard if you were listening, paying attention to Ollie Barrett there, the Darren Osborne, whom I spoke about last night in the monologue last night, the man who drove a van into a crowd of Muslims near a mosque in Finsbury Park in London. Well, he's been sentenced to life in prison, the judge recommending that he serves a minimum term of 43 years behind bars. He's a 48-year-old man, and he was found guilty yesterday of murdering Makram Ali after deliberately driving that van, that rented van that he drove from Cardiff into the crowd there. Other people, of course, are dealing with life-changing injuries. Mrs. Justice Chima Grubb told Osborne, "This was a terrorist attack you intended to kill." And there were emotional scenes outside the court when Mr. Ali's family spoke to the media, saying they couldn't imagine the trauma he felt. His daughter spoke very eloquently about him and how they were affected by his death, saying that he was a very peaceful and very simple man. This all happened on the 19th of June last year at 12:15 a.m, just after midnight. And he was found guilty of murder and attempted murder yesterday. And as he was led away today to begin his sentence, he said, "God bless you all. Thank you to the, presumably to the judge, to the jury, and to those assembled in the court." Now, Joe Tidy has followed the case from Woolwich Crown Court and has been there since the beginning of the hearing and has been filing reports for Sky News all throughout the hearing. And after the sentencing, he sent this report back to Sky News. It is a bit longer than the clips I normally play, but there's a lot of detail in there and it's worthwhile. Listen to Joe Tidy describing the scenes as Osborne was sentenced and the judge said her piece upon delivering that sentence.
In her sentencing, she gave 43 years minimum and a life sentence to Darren Osborne. And when she passed her sentencing remarks, she said, "You have been convicted on overwhelming evidence by an intelligent British jury who saw through your pathetic last-ditch attempt to deceive them by blaming someone else for your crimes." She's referring to here a bizarre story that was branded as a fabrication and absurd by the prosecution. It was last Friday for the first time that we heard Mr. Osborne's defence. He said that he wasn't driving the van when it struck those people. He said that it was a man called Dave, a mystery man, never giving his surname, never telling us where he lived. He said another man, Terry Jones, again, no evidence this person exists. He said that he was involved as well, but that was seen through by the jury and they convicted him of murder and attempted murder. The judge also talked about the fact that this has never, at any point in this trial, been considered anything less than a terrorism act. This was an act of terror brought about by a hatred of Muslims. And she said to him, "Yours was a suicide mission. You expected to be shot dead by the police, as you knew the terrorists who committed the London Bridge attack had been. You wrote a suicide note the night before driving to London. In it, you set out in foul language your twisted view of Muslims. I'm not going to repeat those things in court." She also talked about the way that he was self-radicalised, as the police have described it. A very concerning situation where Mr. Osborne went from being a troubled man with, albeit, a criminal record of things like assault and shoplifting and burglary, so relatively petty crimes, and the fact he was a loner and a functioning alcoholic. But he went from that to a murderous terrorist In around 3 or 4 weeks last summer, his girlfriend of 20 years said at no point before that had he mentioned anything about Muslims or any Islamophobic comments were made to her from him. But it was when they watched a programme called Three Girls on the BBC, which was a docudrama about the Rochdale grooming scandal. She said that was the trigger. And between then and the attack, she said he became obsessed with far-right material. And of course, we had the quick succession of the Manchester Arena bombing and the London Bridge attack. And in that very short period of time, she said she saw him brainwashed effectively. And this is something that the police have been very concerned about. In the last hour or so, we've heard from the Home Office saying this government will continue to be unwavering in our resolve to combat all forms of terrorism, whatever the underlying motives. They said we will shortly be publishing our new counter-terrorism strategy, which will set out our approach as we continue to stop and challenge these people.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in a minute, what the Home Office have been saying. Now, I did write on richieallen.co.uk today that I have a pretty serious problem with the media coverage of the case. I have to say, first of all, that I don't have any special insight into the case because I don't know anybody involved in it, and I certainly wasn't present at Woolwich Crown Court during the hearing. But, you know, I have to concede the story told during that trial could conceivably be true. You've got to start out working from that premise. But the media has got to be sceptical, right? It's got to do more than just repeat what is coming out of the court. We deserve better than that. You know, they have to challenge this notion that this man turned in 3 weeks having seen the Three Girls BBC docudrama about the grooming gangs. And they're dropping from the story, by the way, that he was apparently hell-bent on killing Jeremy Corbyn. That's why he hired the van and made his way to London. He wanted to kill Corbyn because he blamed Corbyn and Sadiq Khan, apparently, allegedly, for their enabling of radical Islam and radical jihadists. The media's got to do better than that. It's got to investigate further. The bewilderment expressed by his girlfriend, his partner of many years, not only her, but his mates down the pub and the barmen who saw him regularly. They've got to question his mental illness that he was treated for. You know, they've got to be doubting in their examination of what we're told. That's the job of the media, ultimately. I know you do get several lectures a month from me on the media, and I know it's a pain in the arse, but they do have to be doubting from the get-go. They've got to be a bit austere in their attitude towards authority. Because you can make an argument that people don't see a docudrama, then go online, get radicalised, and then in 3 weeks drive a car at pedestrians. Now, I'm not saying that's what didn't happen, because I can't prove it, but I'm saying we've got to be sceptical about that tale, about that explanation. And so in the absence of the media on this programme, and I can only speak for myself, you have to ask questions and you have to express a bit of doubt about it. And I do think there's something very sinister here. You know, and the story is so familiar, loner, depressed, quiet, unassuming, all of a sudden, bang, killer in 3 weeks, leaving a note in the van. And of course, he was filmed on CCTV in his local pub writing that note, apparently. It's just all weird and deserves more scrutiny, but it won't get any. What the media does is, rather than scrutinise it and ask people, come on, really, in 3 weeks, this guy, explain more to us how that happens. What they've done is, rather than ask any questions, they've moved into the next phase of their coverage, which is what to be done. This is the problem, reaction, solution part of all of this. What can we do? Well, I'll tell you what, dear listener, I was watching the BBC and Sky News today with great interest. The answers being proposed to counter the radicalisation of people like Darren Osborne, the answers are startling. Have a listen to this. Sky News spoke with the director of the Centre for Security and Intelligence Studies. He's a man called Professor Anthony Gleese, and he's an Oxford professor. So first of all, was Oxford Professor Anthony Gleese, was he bothered by the speed of Darren Osborne's radicalisation?
Well, the speed does surprise me. The fact doesn't surprise me. And people like me have been saying for, you know, really years now, we need to get a grip on what is being broadcast by the social media, predominantly by the social media, but not only by the social media. In the case of the Finsbury Park terrorist, Darren Osborne, it seemed very clear from the evidence given in court that the initial impulse to become a terrorist came from watching a BBC drama called Three Girls about the Rochdale sexual grooming case. So this wasn't something online. This was something that was being broadcast and broadcast by the BBC.
But putting extreme material online is one thing. Broadcasters broadcasting documentaries or docudramas about sensitive issues is another. You can't stop that, can you?
Great question by the presenter. Surely, Professor Gleeze, you're not suggesting that somebody be given the job and the responsibility of telling the BBC, sorry, but you cannot broadcast this docudrama which is based entirely on factual evidence. His answer, and I don't do melodrama or building this stuff up, this guy's answer, well, it's frankly terrifying.
Can you?
Well, I think you can, actually. I'm a firm believer in a free press, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in excellent news, and I'm a firm believer in excellent documentaries.
But, here comes the but.
But the whole point about the drama, The Three Girls, was that it was meant to inflame our passions. And you may say, rightly so, and I would understand that. But the Rochdale grooming issue and the grooming issue in Oxford, not far from where I live, these are very, very traumatic things. And is public safety helped if they are turned not from news, not from documentaries, but being into plays that play on our emotions? I would say no. And I think there needs to be much firmer regulation.
By the way, the echo there is not my problem. Sky News had problems with their feed to the studio all afternoon. It's not my issue there. There you have it. Companies like the BBC should not be allowed to put out programmes like Three Girls, which was true, by the way. The story was true because he said it inflames passions and tensions. But what about the argument that the BBC programme highlighted the failure of the police to investigate these Muslim grooming gangs in Rochdale because of cultural sensitivities and the fact that police were nervous about being labelled racist? Now, of course, it was worse than that. The Home Office compelled the police forces involved to drop it. How could you dare suggest telling the national broadcaster or anybody else you can't put out that documentary because it might inflame tensions against Muslims? Okay, but it's true. So what he's saying is, it's almost like you got to make it look like all is rosy in the garden between the native indigenous culture and minority cultures. And this guy Gleeze, a professor at Oxford University, by the way, is sounding like a fascist. The presenter asks him, if you could do one thing, what would you do? And he doubles down on the censorship. Listen.
Well, one thing that could be done relatively quickly, but I don't think she'd want to do it, would be to get our people, GCHQ in particular, onto the offensive. That is to say, to use electronic measures to take down the sites that are radicalizing and putting out extreme material, whether it's sexual filth or political filth. She could do that by pressing the button, because that's a British thing.
But marvellous. She could do that by pressing the button. That's a British thing. Political filth, sexual filth. The government gets a button to shut it down whenever the government deems it dangerous, insightful or hateful. This guy's a beauty, isn't he? And why are we labouring the point here? We're labouring the point because this guy is listened to. This guy's a big cheese. Right? He carries on.
But I don't think she will want to get into an offensive war, unfortunately. The other thing that she can do is try to convince our new best friends in the White House that they need to put pressure on American companies to fit in with what are British and indeed European norms, and that we shouldn't be taking the nonsense from the internet service providers that all they're doing is providing a service. They're publishers like you are, like the BBC is, like our British press, all of which are regulated because national safety and national security are of prime importance in this very divided island of ours.
Yeah, the BBC and Sky and all the rest are regulated, but they are government or system propagandists, aren't they? So forget about the regulation. This guy's calling for all-out censorship and to give control of broadcasters and the output of broadcasters over to the intelligence agencies. How wonderful. Why not? Doesn't get any more Orwellian than that. You know, how blatant is that? And there was no argument on that point from the Sky News presenter, by the way. So while this is going on today, the BBC and the social media giants, Twitter and Facebook, they continue to promote the flavour of the month, Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson is the football hooligan turned broadcaster who spends his days searching the internet for instances of Muslims committing crimes in European countries. And then he posts that sort of stuff on his Twitter feed and he says, see, Muslims are all madmen. That's what Robinson basically does. He says we're at war with Islam, and that's all he ever says, really. And the Quran is a dangerous text that tells Muslims to go and kill the unbelievers. And he says this over and over and over again. And he's loved by Breitbart and InfoWars and other alt-right organisations. The problem you see with Tommy Robinson is that his is a very, very old act. We get a Tommy Robinson every few years. We've had them over the years. Ann Coulter, David Duke, Rush Limbaugh, Paul Watson, Alex's goon, of course, Katie Hopkins. Basically people used by the establishment, by the system, to prop up the left-right, far-left, far-right illusion. That's what they do. These people are turned into minor celebrities. They're trotted out by the media regularly. Now, the left has them as well, of course. I know that. And, you know, we focused on the left, the progressive lunatics on the left, we do that as well. So the result of that, of the attention given to people like Tommy Robinson, is that there's no real investigative journalism. There's no attempt to get to the truth as to why Rochdale happened, why the migration crisis sees millions of refugees, including some very bad dudes, by the way, ending up in Europe. Robinson just perpetuates the old stereotypical us versus them. It's as old as Father Time. And those who manipulate events, by the way, creating chaos in the Middle East, they love goons like Tommy Robinson, who's got no real insight whatsoever. It's all black and white to Robinson. Sharia law, imams preaching violence, the young Asian men grooming gangs and the terror attacks. Robinson is angry about all that stuff. And I'm not saying he's not justified, by the way. Never have done. But he doesn't have the intellect to look beyond the smokescreen and see what is behind it, what is going on. This is why we've been so disheartened, I suppose is a bad word, so saddened by the 180 degree turn of InfoWars, you know, that used to talk about the controllers of all of this. Who's really pulling the strings in the Middle East and why? Who's creating the lunatic jihadists and why? So, Robinson doesn't have the brains or the intellect to see what's behind the smokescreen, spends all his time screaming about the Quran, how Islam is evil, how Islam wants to establish caliphates all over the world. And when you say that sort of stuff, you develop a following. You develop fandom. People love it. They'll donate to it. It's what they want to hear. And it ends up with shouting matches across town centres. You have progressives just as stupid as Robinson on one side of the street, and on the other side of the street, you have Robinson and his mob. And what happens? Well, the system plays them like kippers. like kippers. It's wonderful. Now, Tommy Robinson, Jada Franson, they have no responsibility for what Darren Osborne did, if he did it. None. It's just more manipulation. It's a script. So Robinson went on Newsnight last night. You see, the BBC play these people like kippers. They play them like fiddles. He was on with a woman called Kirsty Wark. And it was a thing of beauty. It's classic BBC. You know, fostering, kindling, you know, the left-right, the alt-right, alt-left, the far-right, far-left paradigm. Robinson played his part in it. He satisfied his base. Do you want to hear some of it? Robinson and Kirsty Wark on the BBC last night.
Anger. When a Muslim bombed our kids, we were told not to look back in anger. What was the purpose of that tweet? Because that tweet was on the dashboard of Darren Osborne's van when he attacked.
Can you? Why are you not sitting here reading? Darren Osborne wrote the reasons why he'd done this attack. Why are we not talking about the reasons why he'd done this attack? Shall I tell you one of the reasons why he'd done the attack? What he wrote.
No, he obsessively looked you up online. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, all I'm saying is he wrote, terrorists march through our country today. There was an Al-Quds march. Now, the problem I have is that you're the BBC News and you did not report on that.
All I'm saying is, do you accept that there is a lot of hate speech about, and you've condemned that from other people, for example, Anjem Trowdery, who's now in jail. Do you take any responsibility for that being hate speech?
You think that's hate speech?
I'm asking.
No, do you think that's hate speech?
I'm asking you if it's hate speech.
No, it's categorically not. It's impossible. You have Muslims in this country, in mosques across this country, calling for the death of homosexuals, calling for the takeover of our country. That's real hate speech. Me saying don't look back in anger, me putting these tweets, is not hate speech in any way.
Why do you think that he obsessively looked for you online? Because actually it's the case that you were presenting in a way that encouraged him to take action against
Absolutely
people.
Absolutely unbelievable that you're saying that. 49 million people watched my videos in that 4-week period. And 193 million people read my tweets.
Yeah.
The reason why people are searching for me is because I give them the truth, unlike you. You're not giving them the truth.
Can I just say, Tommy Robinson, yes. The fact is,
yes.
After he attacked outside Finsbury Mosque,
which he gave you a reason why,
he wrote a letter, and in that letter he quoted your tweet. All I'm asking you is, do you have any responsibility?
Please, for your viewers,
it was heard in court.
For your viewers, read what he said. I'll tell you what he said. He said he quoted Sadiq Khan. He said just part and parcel of living in a big city. He quoted Jeremy Corbyn.
He quoted you.
No, he didn't quote me.
He did. He quoted you in the tweet. He quoted you in his letter. He quoted that tweet.
Please tell me what
he quoted. That
no, he didn't.
Anger when a Muslim bombed our kids, we were told not to look back in anger.
Do you know what that was? No, he said don't look back in anger. He didn't say that exact words. He said, don't look back in anger. The front page of the Sun newspaper after the Manchester attack...
It's rubbish, this, right? This is rubbish.
Do you deny that he quoted you in any way?
Yes, I completely... No, he gave reasons why he'd done this.
So he did quote you?
No, he didn't quote me. I can't believe why you're not even looking at the reasons. I can't believe you're not looking at the fact we had 3 massive terrorist attacks. We have 22,000...
This is not what this is about.
No, this is the reason why he'd done it.
This is about the rise of right-wing extremists and people being radicalised very quickly online, in court. And indeed, the commander of anti-terrorism at the Met said that people are radicalised within 4 weeks.
It's rubbish, that. Robinson supporters will love that. They rage at the BBC and Kirsty Wark's conduct, which is typical of a BBC presenter. Missing the point entirely, of course. Why did Darren Osborne do it? He wrote down why he did it, protested Robinson. Robinson screamed that he wrote it down. He wrote it down why he did it, because of the terrorist attacks in the country. Robinson sticking to the Quran is evil incarnate and all of these terror attacks and all the Muslims murderers. It's very hard to listen, for me anyway, on a daily basis to this intellectually redundant shit. It really is dreadful. Robinson is a riot. He wears, no pun intended by the way, he wears Mossad t-shirts in some interviews. He's a puppet. But there's a great career for guys like Robinson now. More than there's ever been. There was always space for these lunatics, you know, these black and white guys, these polarisers, on the left and on the right. Great career for them. They make plenty of money out of doing it. Robinson is a puppet. And when they start shutting down the independent media permanently, which is coming, when they do that, they will cite goons like Tommy Robinson. His name will be bandied about and Britain's first and all the rest of it. But it's ironic because they don't care about Tommy Robinson. they don't care about InfoWars. They love them. They use them to promote this narrow view of the world, us against them, Islam versus the West. What they really want rid of is the genuine alternative independent media that's offering a genuinely alternative explanation for why this is happening. And of course, Robinson, intellectually redundant as he is, and most of his supporters, when you say stuff like this, they accuse people who do say what I am saying of being, of being progressive or being socialist or being on the left or being Labour or whatever. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. You've only got to listen to my programmes. I don't deny that there is a problem with radicalisation. I don't deny that there has been and is a problem with how young Asian men, some young Asian men, not the majority, some see white women. And I certainly don't deny that among the migrant flow, there are very, very dangerous men hell-bent on doing things. But how? Who, what, why, where, when and how? Who's responsible for that? These are questions, you see, that don't get discussed. Because it's all us versus them, stand across the street from one another, scream abuse at one another, Antifa, progressives, the alt-right. It's just a load of bollocks, monumental bollocks. And nowhere in there is the truth or anything like it. Going to take a very quick break. This is Friday's, how would I describe it? Special edition of the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 29 minutes to 6 in the afternoon UK time as we do the programme. Very quick break. When we come back, I've plenty more interesting things to tell you.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structure and application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back to the programme. Speaking of censorship, Facebook has announced its latest plans to tackle fake news on its platform. Yeah, Here's Laurie Harfenist of Ortiz the Resident. She's pretty good. Have a listen to this. This is what Facebook has planned for basically, this is Facebook's plan to basically disappear independent content creators off the platform. Staggering stuff. Laurie Harfenist from The Resident, RT.
Facebook is taking a lot of heat right now. Rightfully so, if you ask me. But still, it's pretty amazing to watch. They got blamed for getting Trump elected by letting people buy fake ads and spreading fake news. So now their leader, Mark Zuckerberg, is scrambling all over the place to rebrand Facebook as a place for good and trusted information. And he just announced one initiative that sounds incredibly stupid to me. Because he just announced that in order to counter fake news, Facebook will ask its users to rate the credibility of news publishers. In a recent post, he wrote, "We decided that having the community determine which sources are broadly trusted would be most objective. And the way that's going to work is through their surveys. After a user views a piece of news, Facebook is now going to ask them if they're familiar with that news source, and if so, whether they trust it. The idea behind it," Zuckerberg writes, "is that some organizations are only trusted by their followers, while others are broadly trusted across society." This is according to Zuckerberg and his metrics, mind you. And so then they'll gather up all that juicy, delicious data to compute which news sources are to be more trusted and presumably get more easily circulated versus which news sources are not to be trusted and presumably get squashed.
And this was the reason Facebook was founded, was engineered from the get-go. People must wake up to that. Facebook was never about a nice place to share your pictures and connect with people, you know, like the natural successor to Friends Reunited. This is a great place to connect with people all over the world. It was never about that. That was the ruse. Facebook was about getting the entire population of the world, or as many as they could, in the same place so that they can control what you see, what you read, what you watch, and what you hear. And shadow banning is here already, systematically. Shadow banning is going on. We see that with, you know, the Richie Allen Facebook page has 20,000 followers. It should have about 50,000 by now. But last year, or even the year before last, they started slowing down the rate with which people were following the page. They did that to everybody, to David Icke's Facebook page as well, and everybody else. I saw that. So, but even 20,000, you put an article on there from the website. The other day we put stuff on about the attempt to ban goods imported into Ireland from the occupied territories. And it's up there for an hour and it's had three reactions out of 20,000 follows. This is what they're doing, you see. You know, and they're going to do it. There's nothing is going to stop it. The only way we can stop it is to do your own thing. Have your own website, whether it's your own blog, whatever. And people know, they want to find out what you're saying, they go there. Here's a very serious story. It's Friday, February 2nd, 2018. Listen to this. This is very serious. Health leaders have written to the Justice Secretary, David Gawk, urging him to reform the payout system for negligence claims against the National Health Service. They say costs are spiralling, unsustainable, and diverting vast amounts from frontline care. Wait for it. The NHS Confederation, the British Medical Association, and medical lawyers are among the signatories. The Minister of Justice has asked the advisory body, the Civil Justice Council, to look at ways to limit payments. The annual cost of claims is said to have almost doubled since 2010, according to the letter. The NHS in England spent £1.7 billion on clinical negligence claims last year. Right? Niall Dixon, wait till you hear this guy. Niall Dixon is the chief executive of the NHS Confederation. That's right, I had to double check. Here he is giving his reaction to this to Sky News Today. This, dear listener, again, at the risk of sounding melodramatic, this is tyranny. It is high tyranny indeed. Niall Dixon, Chief Executive of the NHS Confederation.
No, I don't think that's true. I think part of the reason why there are more claims now than there were is perhaps a change in culture. There are certainly a lot of smaller claims are starting to come through. And I think it's also the fact, and it's a good thing, that there's greater transparency in the NHS and a greater willingness to identify when mistakes have been made. The difficulty, though, of a culture in which there are lots of claims and individuals are being sued and organisations are finding themselves paying out vast sums of money is that it can then encourage defensive medicine. It can encourage doctors and other health professionals to order too many tests, too many interventions, and also to try and clamp down on that open culture by making people defensive and more secretive. So we want to try and push the other way and make the situation less blameworthy and more open and greater learning to try and prevent mistakes from occurring.
Did you hear that? NHS Confederation Chief David Nicholls says that a claim culture is to blame for the NHS spending £1.7 billion on negligence claims last year. It's everybody else's fault. There's a claim culture, he said. What a plonker. Every one of those claims would have been upheld in court, so they were genuine. So when you claim against them for negligence, it goes to arbitration, it goes to a court, and the judge involved, sometimes it's a jury, sometimes there isn't, they say, well, yes, clear case of negligence, and we award Mr. or Mrs. Smith or Mr. or Mrs. Murphy this amount of money. There's a claim culture, he said. What a plonker. We need to limit the liability of the NHS because there's a claim culture. This is tyranny. There's more. Listen to this guy. Listen to this.
Where is the money coming from to settle these cases? Current liability claims estimated at £65 billion. Is that money affecting frontline care?
Well, that money comes from you, me and every other taxpayer is the short answer. And £65 billion is really a staggering sum of money. Of course, that won't be paid in 1 year. It'll be over a number of years. But it is a huge liability that the service already faces. I think the most worrying figure, in a way, is that over the last 5 years, we've seen around 11.5% increases year after year in this figure, in these claims. And that really is unsustainable, which is why we're asking the government to think again, to look at the way in which claims totals are calculated and to adjust it so that we have a much more reasonable system, as they do in some other countries.
But is that not penalising the victim? I mean, we can't underestimate, can we, the devastating impact, the life-changing impact that medical mistakes have on people's lives. And if you're saying, well, we need to cap the amount spent, are they not entitled to that compensation?
Very good question. Brilliant question, in fact. She could have followed it up by saying, not only are people entitled to be properly compensated when negligence occurs, but don't we need punitive damages to punish the bejesus out of those responsible in order to teach them that it's unacceptable, that it can't happen again in the future? She didn't say that, but she should have. But it's a good question.
Station.
They are entitled to compensation, and you're absolutely right. I don't think you can possibly underestimate the impact that it has, and it's really difficult even to imagine what it is like for parents having to come to terms, for example, with a disabled child. The reality, though...
Well, hang on a second. What about parents coming to terms with the death of a child? Like the Olympian Alan Condon, gentleman, who was on this programme only a couple of weeks ago. Alan's son Ben died because of gross negligence. Disabled children, or children disabled because of negligence, dreadful thing. Dreadful. Let's talk about people whose children died because of negligence. How much would you give the Condon family? Millions is the answer. It's never going to bring their son back. And nobody in the position of Alan Condon and his wife, they're not motivated by money. Money is never going to bring back their son. But you've got to hammer them. That's what punitive measures are all about. Screw them to the wall. How dare they say that oh, this is affecting frontline care. How dare they say that? Oh, there's a claim culture. No, fuck off. You've been found. You've been found culpable in a court of law. It has passed the legal test. Therefore, you have to be punished accordingly. And how dare you and doctors and your lawyers start to lobby for the reduction, to limit, to put a cap on what you can be fined. It's outrageous. I mean, it is. Boiled my piss today, this did.
Though, is that we have to balance what is affordable for society as well as being just and fair to individual victims. And we have to get that balance right. We have a free healthcare system in this country, and I think that should be taken into
account. Oh, the violins are playing now, you know. La 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 la. We have a free healthcare system, and we have to take that into account. No! Stop leaving scalpels inside people. Stop killing people with superbugs. Stop killing people's children because of gross negligence. Stop doing that. And if there is a cap placed on the amount that you can be fined, you ain't going to stop doing that. It's madness, this, folks.
...into account when calculating compensation claims. But I think it is a question of finding a balance. It's not saying that people shouldn't have a right to compensation. They absolutely should. Nor is it...
Yeah, yeah. It's not saying that people shouldn't have a right to compensation. What it's saying is they should have a right to fuck all. A nominal amount. Hey, we're sorry there that we didn't notice, you know, crucial symptoms that your son had. We're sorry that when we fucked up, that we tried to bury paperwork. We're sorry about all of that. Here's £20,000. That's what this guy is saying. And this is tyrannical. And there's no opposition to it. Apart from a couple of presenters asking a couple of questions. What bollocks. I say this, and I've said this for years. The awarding of punitive damages is an essential part of holding massive bodies to account, whether it be a private corporation or the NHS. Whether we love the NHS or not shouldn't come into it. It's essential, and they want to limit it. How will they learn if they're not punished for it? Negligence that causes loss of life or permanent injury. Oh, we have no money. Well, stop fucking up then. End of story. Pay doctors what they're worth. Stop working them into the ground. And nurses. This, of course, has echoes of mass tort reform in the United States, which, of course, is being led by multinational corporations trying to introduce this tyranny, limiting the damages that can be awarded. Bastards. It's what they're doing. Ah, no opposition to this. It's been in all the newspapers today. Nobody is coming out speaking, saying, look, no, no. No, there will be no cap. A judge, a learned man or woman, should have the right to award serious punitive damages against the NHS when they are proven to be negligible, causing injury or causing death. Right. Very quick break. When we come back, one or two more very quick stories. This is Friday's Richie Allen Show special programme in lieu of my absence last Monday. Back in a minute with one or two more interesting things to tell you.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
There's a place the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Right, welcome back to the programme then. Good to be with you this Friday. Just to give you that news that broke at the beginning of the programme, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, has approved the release of a controversial memo which is thought to contain evidence of bias on the part of the FBI. It's about the FBI's conduct of its inquiry into alleged Russian meddling in US elections. Trump said he had given it to Congress, which has now released it. You can hear some of what Trump had to say today, by the way, as well.
I think it's terrible. You want to know the truth? I think it's a disgrace. What's going on in this country, I think it's a disgrace. The memo was sent to Congress. It was declassified. Congress will do whatever they're going to do. But I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our country. And when you look at that and you see that and so many other things, what's going on, a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves and much worse than that. So I sent it over to Congress. They will do what they're going to do. Whatever they do is fine. It was declassified. And let's see what happens. But a lot of people should be ashamed. Thank you very much.
That was Trump speaking just before it was released. Of course, it's been released now. It's the gift that never stops giving, the Trump saga. And it's got the whole world gripped. I've spoken so much about this and what I think is really going on there. I'm not going to do it now. Hey, do you remember Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? Do you remember that? Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter. Great, great film that made me laugh. Even when it comes on TV occasionally now, I watch bits of it and it makes me laugh. Well, Alex Winter, who played Keanu Reeves, I wouldn't say sidekick, but he played opposite him in the film. He's been speaking to the BBC, BBC Radio, about being sexually abused as a child actor, saying that he wasn't able to tell about it. He wasn't able to tell anybody about it because it was potentially very dangerous. He played Bill alongside Keanu Reeves' Ted, and he said he believed that Hollywood has a different culture today and said that there is more freedom today to talk about these things than there used to be. I'm not sure about that, but I'm not going to argue with him. Here's Alex Winter speaking to the BBC about his experiences as a child.
Because I was a kid, you know, had I been older, had I had more resources, had I, right? And, you know, yeah. Every victim goes through this, whether they're a child or, you know, an adult rape victim or whatever. You hear this over and over again. You know, all of that was irrelevant because I only had the resources that I had. I only had the abilities that I had. And it was absolutely taboo in the popular vernacular. So I didn't feel that I had any place of safety to unlock an extremely sensitive and potentially dangerous secret, you know, because it is there is a power dynamic that does put you in a position where you're afraid for your own safety. So there's that on top of the taboo nature of being public. And, you know, the vital importance of what's going on at the moment, to whatever degree it keeps going, and it's going to keep going, is that, you know, and I've said this before, had I existed in a culture like the one that's happening at this moment, I mean, that's a very different culture. It allows, if you feel like these sorts of things are now being spoken about in a much more accepting and open way on a societal level, it gives you a lot more freedom to just tell anybody even if it's just, you know, because usually you're not telling anybody. I mean, nobody. And that's a very dangerous place to be in mentally.
Fair play to Alex Winter for speaking out. Takes a bit of courage, that, and I have the utmost admiration for him. I'm sure you do as well. But I'm not sure I agree with him. People are speaking out, but they're speaking out about harassment. That's what you're getting, is harassment and bullying that we've heard a lot of since the Weinstein thing broke in the New York Times. But what we're not hearing a lot about, despite Corey Feldman going public and speaking about what happened to him, we're not hearing about the abuse of children in Hollywood, which was rampant, widespread, common. And we're not hearing those stories now. We're not. We should be. There should be men and women coming forward like Alex Winter talking about their experiences, but they're not, you see. This is still being kept hidden. And I think a lot of the Weinstein stuff and allegations about Kevin Spacey and Michael Douglas and everybody else is masking, whether intentionally or not, the greater depraved side of Hollywood, and that is the abuse of children in Los Angeles for decades. And that's all I'm going to say on that. That's about it for Friday's programme. I could have spoken a bit about Theresa May's visit to China and Brexit and all of that, but I'm not going to bore you to death with that. You hear enough of it on this programme. I'd only be repeating myself. Thanks for tuning in today. I appreciate it. If you came in on the end of it, and this is what happens, because it was a last minute decision, really, to do the live programme today. If you came in on the end of it, the podcast will be online real soon. In around about 10, 15 minutes at the latest, it'll be online. And I'll put it on YouTube this evening as well. I'm not going anywhere this evening. I was going to go and see Salford play rugby at the AJ Bell Stadium Rugby League. The Super League began last night, in fact, but I'm not going to the rugby. I'm going to be indoors chilling out. So I'll put it on YouTube myself. And as I said, the podcast, and it can be downloaded on Spotify, on iTunes and all the rest of it. Listen, have a great weekend. Thanks for interrupting your day to tune into this kind of last minute broadcast. Have a lovely weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. And as usual, Sunday View will be live on Sunday at 11 a.m. That's UK time, Sunday View at 11. Until then, bye from me. Going to leave you with some Bruce the Boss Springsteen. Bye. See you Sunday. Bye now.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. Far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half my